You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 2nd of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House with me, Robert Bound, and Hugo MacDonald.
To continue our special celebration of the Olympics, tonight we're live at Korea House at the Royal Thames Yacht Club in West London.
Coming up in the next 60 minutes, we'll be hearing from the CEO of Korean Tourism Association.
We'll be trying the ancient pain relief method of acupuncture.
And we'll be discussing the successes and failures of branding and sponsorship during the Olympic Games.
Later in the programme, we'll be serenaded by a troupe of diehard K-pop fans.
All that to come here on a special Midori House live from Korea House at the Royal Thames Yacht Club in West London.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Monocle 24 News, the United Nations Arab League Joint Special Envoy to Syria, Kofi Annan, has announced that he will be stepping down. The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said in a statement that Annan had decided not to renew his mandate, which expires on the 31st of August. Annan's term has been plagued by deep divisions within the international community over how to resolve the issue in Syria. China and Russia have vetoed three council resolutions intended to stop President Assad's attacks on civilians and halt the fighting, which has escalated into a full-scale civil war. Meanwhile, the director of Human Rights Watch in the Middle East and North Africa, Nadim Houri, has denounced the apparent execution of Assad loyalists by members of the Free Syrian Army.
This is a key moment for the Free Syrian Army. They are gaining more control over territory, and the entire world is going to watch how they're going to be behaving. Are they going to respect international standards, or are we going to see grave human rights violations and humanitarian law violations like we have documented by regime forces? And this sets a very dangerous precedent.
The Spanish Interior Ministry has released pictures of three people it said were linked to Al-Qaeda, who were arrested today in Spain as part of a crackdown on the organisation. The ministry didn't identify the pictures and officials declined to provide any names. The Interior Minister, Jorge Fernandez Diaz, said earlier that the suspects were detained in southern Spain, one in possession of explosives they planned to use in attacks in Spain and elsewhere in Europe. More than 100 experts have attended the first international scientific meeting on nodding syndrome in Uganda's capital, Kampala. Nodding disease is of unknown origins and has no known cure. Victims tend to have seizure-like episodes and constant head nodding. According to the World Health Organization, it affects over 4,000 children in northern Uganda and has so far caused the death of 200 children since it was reported by the country's health ministry in 2009. Well, Uganda's Director General of Health Services, Dr. Jane Achen, is calling on the WHO to recognise nodding syndrome as a tropical disease.
It is important for us to have it recognised by World Health Organization that it is a tropical disease, that it needs attention, that it needs action, that it needs support. And it is only when it is included among the neglected tropical diseases that this attention can be directed to it.
Romania's Constitutional Court has today delayed until the 12th of September its ruling on whether a referendum to impeach the president was valid. The court had expected to invalidate Sunday's referendum after official data showed that while a majority of those voting wanted to dismiss the president, turnout did not reach a required 50% threshold. Sports news now, and China's Olympic badminton head coach Li Yongbo has apologised for instructing his top two players to throw matches. Mr. Li said he was to blame for the action, which was taken by two Chinese players and six others in an attempt to secure easier draws in the knockout stage of the badminton competition. Meanwhile, the British Prime Minister David Cameron and the Russian President Vladimir Putin discussed the Olympics, economic cooperation and Syria at their meeting in Downing Street.
Well, of course, there have been some differences in the positions that we've taken over the Syrian conflict. We both want to see an end to that conflict and a stable Syria. And we'll continue to discuss with our foreign ministers how we can take this agenda forward. I look forward to taking the president to the judo at the Olympic Park, but I note that we'll be spectators and not participants.
Britain have overtaken Russia in the Olympics table and are now in fifth position with 4 gold, 6 silver, and 4 bronze medals. And finally, Dutch police are investigating how needles got into 6 turkey sandwiches on Delta Airlines flights from Amsterdam to various US cities last month. It comes as a passenger found what appeared to be a sewing needle in a sandwich on board an Air Canada flight from Vancouver to Toronto. No one was injured in any of the incidents, and police said it was too early to say whether there was any connection with that latest incident on Air Canada. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And you're listening to a special edition of Midori House. It's an Olympic session, Hugo.
Yes, it is.
Shall we let the cat out of the bag? Today we're experiencing a taste of Korean culture at the Royal Thames Yacht Club in London. And it's the strangest conflict of...
Well, there's a lot to take in, isn't there?
Should we first set the scene? What's one of the most favourite things we love about Korea is K-pop.
Exactly, and we're joined here by a massive troupe of K-pop fans. That's not the last we're going to be hearing from them.
I don't think it is indeed. These are a group of fans that have come. I think they've come on a bus specially to come onto this special Midori House.
Our love and their love of K-pop. Here.
And of course, none of these girls started screaming until we dressed up in our traditional Korean costumes.
But that's the other thing that we should probably let out of the bag. I'm wearing a Royal Korean Day outfit.
You're dressed as a king.
With a king.
And I'm dressed as a hunting king.
Hunting king.
So I'm going to set the scene. You're wearing a sort of red silk, it's a sort of flowing cloak.
Yeah. And an extraordinary, beautiful crown, which is sort of black. And what shape is that?
I guess it's sort of, demi-conical. Yeah, to go with your demigod status. And the Royal Thames Yacht Club is a beautiful place. It's all wood panelling and thick carpets. And it's amazing and strange to have so many screaming K-pop fans. We're sort of arse end onto Hyde Park. We're just spitting distance from Rotten Row, I guess. So we've got one of the nicer spots in London for an Olympic tent to pitch itself, I guess.
As well as K-pop, we've got acupuncture. We've also got... a wonderful artist who is painting live. I've been watching a magic show upstairs. Really, there's no end to the amount of fun happening.
I can't wait for the rest of this show already.
I know. Well, let's kick things off, shall we?
All right.
It's 18:07 here in London. You're listening to Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olympijski dei grisa pro Monocle 24.
Lontoosta maailmalle Monocle 24.
Elä laavalla olympia tähti elä Monocle arva washin.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monocle 24.
Shooting Olympique zai Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
And you are listening to Midori House live from Korea House in London. Where are we live from Korea House in London? Give it a whoop! Damn true.
It's the best audience ever.
I know.
Well, any Olympic sceptics doubting the potential legacy of the Games should look no further than Seoul 1988. The Games were instrumental in opening up South Korea to the world and kick-started its transformation into the economic powerhouse it is today. Present during that 30 years of change was Charm Lee, president and CEO of the Korean Tourism Organization. Originally from Germany and born Bernhard Quandt, his appointment in 2009 made him the first naturalised Korean to take such a high-profile government position. At the Saatchi Gallery this week, he took Monocle on a tour of the Korean Eye 2012 exhibition, emphasising how significant the Games were for his adopted country in 1988.
Of course, the Olympics are a time when, you know, world attention is focused on this place. So it's a very good stage to promote Korea. And we do that in many ways. One, we're right now in the Saatchi Gallery here in London. We co-sponsor a exhibition of modern Korean art, about 34 Korean young artists show their works here for a period of 2 months. The exhibition is called Korean Eye, and it's an eye-opener for a modern Korean art, but also, you know, it's a window into the Korean soul and Korean culture, because modern art, of course, comes from traditions and from the environment of the traditional culture. A structure made of linen cloth, dyed in calligraphy ink. It reminds you of some dinosaur or some archaic kind of monster or something, but at the same time it emits this raw, untamed energy that Korea is about. Yeah? The other thing, suspended in space, a huge lump of something, actually it's made of newspapers, and again... The Seoul Olympics were for Korea a huge event because it was kind of a coming out of Korea, because nobody knew about Korea, about Seoul. Economically, it had a huge impact because it kind of speeded up economic development in Korea. It was like a stepping onto the world stage. You know, before Seoul, Korea was not known at all, and for a month or so, you know, all of the media coming to Korea, that was a big, big, big event for us. And, we did a lot of preparation for it. I was on a committee, for example, for the most beautiful toilet. For about, 2 years before the Olympics, we started to clean up all the public toilets in the country, to make them, convenient for international visitors. And it was very effective. In Korea you have some of the most beautiful toilets in the world, some of the public toilets. But many things like that. A lot of infrastructure was built, and a lot of development was speeded up. This is one work of art where you can hear the sound. Actually, it's a visual as well as audio kind of work. You see. Yeah, Korea is a what we call early adapter country. The fact that I was named the head of the tourism organization was, of course, the idea of the president himself. But the fact that this appointment was generally accepted, for a non-native citizen of a country to represent the face of, and like tourism is like the face of the nation, right? It's the image of the nation, the very, very core image of the nation. And that image be represented by a different face is something very unusual, and other Asian countries cannot even imagine doing that. But that shows that this culture is very open, actually. It didn't used to be like that. Just a short while ago, Korea was a hermit kingdom for the last 200 years or so, and the Republic of Korea was focused very much on building an industry, building an economy and a democracy and so on. And at times was perceived as a little bit xenophobic, yeah? And very kind of exclusive. And but that has changed very much, And in the last 10 years or so, Korea has opened up, very much to the world. And Koreans have become much more liberal and much more open to change and to new things. And this appointment of myself is just an indication of this openness, new openness of Korea. This one, three images by the same artist, and this lady, she uses collages of photographs, basically. But like this one is people walking across bridges. So the real symbol of Korea is a spiritual, is internal. Korea throughout its history has never put any attention into building large buildings or external symbols. And as soon as I started my job 3 years ago, and I said, let's take these internal values of Korea and create an image around them. So what we did, we used this Korean special spiritual energy. Yeah. Korea is the country in the world that has the most intense and dense concentration of energy. And this energy comes in different shapes and forms. Basically, there's three elements to it. It's called Ki, Heng, and Jong. Ki is this basic archaic energy that you find in the mountains, in the food, in the architecture, in the art, and everywhere, and in the people. Hung is this enthusiastic energy that you find in the music, in the culture, in the performances, and you know, in the togetherness of people when you meet Koreans and celebrate with them and party. There's no end to the party, and it's really fun. Then there is this emotional energy, this warmth, embracing, you know, the visitor, and so on. This is Jeong. Yeah? So the slogan for Korea is, you know, if your batteries are low, if you feel a little bit depressed, come to Korea, recharge your energy, refresh your spirit, you know, remodel your self, bring body and mind back into unity.
And that was Charm Lee, who's the CEO of the Korea Tourism Organization, speaking at the Saatchi Gallery's Korean Eye 2012 show, which continues until the 23rd of September. And you're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from Korea House, and we'll be hearing some K-pop. Stay with us.
Modern Thailand is on the move. Take transport. We're building urban mass transit systems and a $15.4 billion high-speed rail link that will crisscross the country faster than ever before. We've even developed a solar-powered prototype of our famous tuk-tuks for a greener urban journey. And if you think that sounds good, wait until you hear our homegrown teapot. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
The Olympics are coming to London.
Australia is the best sporting nation in the world. It's what we do.
And to Monocle 24.
Bulgaria will excel in freestyle wrestling and shooting.
Turkey has the best wrestlers in the world.
From the 27th of July and throughout the Games, we'll be going faster, higher and stronger, bringing some of the icons of the Games into Midori House, as well as taking Midori House out on the road.
The Estonians will just run around in circles. That's what they do.
I'm not even sure if Lebanon is in the Olympics, but if it is, go Team Lebanon!
O Brasil é bom no futebol.
Great Britain will probably dominate in most of the Olympic sports because we invented virtually all of them.
With a series of special shows from across the city.
Even though we are landlocked, Hungarians are great at water sports. Plus, we love a speedo.
Obviously, Germany is good at football and Germany is very good at canoeing.
To all the winners in Team of Chinese Taipei, make us proud.
Monocle 24. Keeping a sporting eye and an ear on the Olympics.
You are listening to Monocle 24 live from Korea House. Yeah!
Oh my goodness gracious me, what an introduction. I think we might have something louder, Hugo.
I think we've got something louder.
They said in that promo, didn't they? I heard the dulcet tones of Steve Bloomfield saying we're taking Midori House on the road. We've taken it to such a good temporary space today, right?
Haven't we just?
You are listening to a Midori House broadcasting live from Korea House. I'm Robert Bound, I'm with Hugo McDonald, and we'll be trying our acupuncture soonish. But now, as promised, we're joined by a troupe of K-pop dancers and singers. Let's kick off with some tunes.
Ladies, thank you very much indeed.
Twinkle by Girls' Generation. And to tell us more about the K-pop phenomenon, we've got our very own K-pop lovers here. This is Emily Clayton and Kim Lindsay Nguyen. Thank you very much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about where did you come across K-pop, first of all, and what are you doing singing it and dancing it so well in London?
I first came across it through J-pop because I watched mangas and animes and I got into the music, and so eventually it sort of led me to K-pop through YouTube, and I ended up liking it way more than J-pop. And so, you know.
Where do you find other people who love it so that you can practice singing and dancing?
Mainly on like the internet, on Facebook through Clue, or through YouTube and loads of other websites on Tumblr, Twitter.
And well, I guess YouTube's a massive thing for it because it's so much about the dance move as well. And all K-pop bands, girl bands and boy bands, have such amazing, slick, choreographed things, right? They're absolutely amazing. So how do you kind of practice in front of the mirror, but in front of the TV screen or the YouTube screen?
Well, for me, personally, I do it in front of a mirror. Because I like looking at myself when I'm dancing with it. Okay, don't take that wrong way. But, Well, if you're going to learn a dance, you obviously want to get correctly, like with K-pop, because with K-pop, the choreography that they do is very different from like American dancing and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. Yeah. It's different.
Does it get into other Korean things as well? Does it get into food, wanting to go to Seoul and the rest of the country and all the rest of it, presumably?
Yep.
Have you been?
No, I haven't.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the next thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'm really lucky to have done. Yeah.
K-pop fans from around the world descending on Seoul.
I feel like also I'm at the mother of all karaoke conventions here. But I feel like I also slightly feel like it's what Justin Bieber feels like, being surrounded. I get used to this.
You and me dressed as the kings of Korea.
I'm getting quite warm inside my Korean king's royal hunting outfit as well. And what about, so is it the girl groups or the boy bands you like the most?
Boy bands, definitely.
Okay.
Boy
bands. and are they sexy? Because I would think that a lot of Korean boy bands essentially have sort of 15 haircuts on one head. Is this true?
I'd say so, yeah. Their hair does change a lot. But, I know every group has a different concept, but I think all of them in their own way definitely have sex appeal. So.
and is it one of those things, because a lot of, I think we think the bands are sort of graded, there's kind of like the scruffy one, there's the smart one in a suit, there's the kind of indie boy, there's all the rest of it. Is this the same in K-pop boy bands? Do you think there's one for every type of girl?
I think they go through different concepts with the album, each album. So you'll see like different groups, for instance BAP on stage, you'll see them in very, very tough outfits, really messy, scruffy outfits, and they'll dance really rough. And then you'll see them in suits singing, you know, love songs and ballads. So it varies.
Yeah, it varies.
I need to get a long stool. I need to get a tall stool so I can do some serenading. Maybe smart my act up. That's what I need. Emily and Kim, thank you so much for joining us on Midori House Live here from Korea House. And what are we going to have next? I think we're going to be speaking about acupuncture.
Needles.
Needles and pins. Stay tuned.
This is Monocle 24.
Vous écoutez Monocle 24.
Dette Monocle 24.
Essa Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Then a Monocle 24 target, yeah.
Monocle 24, your episode.
This is Monocle 24.
Tama on Monocle Coxigumata Neria.
The Bropa Jalabat. Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24.
For some, acupuncture is a safe and effective holistic medicine backed by more than 2,000 years of practice and research. For others, it's quite terrifying. In Korean acupuncture, the hands are considered a microsystem of the entire body. And joining us now is Senna Lee, a Korean acupuncture doctor who's going to give us a bit of a demonstration. When I say us, actually, it's me, because Rob has an awful paranoia of phobia.
I've experienced the great healing powers of acupuncture, actually, Dr. Lee. But I always faint about 10 minutes afterwards. And I thought, as we're doing a live radio show,
that could be a bit disastrous. You're going to do a small sort of demonstration and maybe explain a little bit about Korean acupuncture whilst you do it.
Yes.
So I give you my hand.
Uh-huh.
And
let me see.
What do you see when you look at my hand?
Okay. A few things.
Yes.
you might. What I'm going to tell you is not doesn't mean. I mean, if I say you have weaker heart or kidney,
I mean, wasn't expecting to be told that live on air.
Oh, so this is
no, that's fine.
No, this is good. No, this is good. By the way, Dr. Lee, I like the fact that you've got three needles stuck in your head.
Yes.
I just noticed that.
That's just for my own back pain.
Oh, is it?
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, so, sorry to interrupt that. Yeah.
Exactly. So my hand, I have a weak heart. Are you able to cure it in the next 5 minutes with some needles?
Actually, I can teach you how to do the self-treatment.
Okay.
Which is more beneficial for you.
Perfect.
You are not going to come to Korea House every day.
Every day for acupuncture. But I don't know, depending how good it is, I might come back.
Okay. So I can tell you the point.
Yes.
Which is right here.
Okay.
Sorry, right here.
Oh, yes. And so you're pushing down on that quite hard.
Uh-huh.
And I can feel that it hurts a bit, actually. And it's not just because of your nail. It's actually, there's a deeper pain in my hand.
What about here?
Yeah, I can feel the pain there as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hugo's yet to find his G-spot in his hand.
But isn't it better to just... I ask you what your current issue is, and issues. Then I just do the acupuncture.
Exactly. Well, I suffer from weak knees quite a lot.
Weak knees? That sounds like quite a Dickensian condition.
You said that's not current issues.
No, at the moment they're okay, but it's something that recurs every now and then.
Do you feel any pain or aches in this very moment?
Yes, my lungs are a bit sore.
Okay. I think I'd better do acupuncture on your lungs rather than your knees.
Oh, okay, fine.
But your both knees are... problematic?
Yes, they have been in the past.
Okay, then I can tell you where to press by yourself.
Fine, whereabouts?
So where are you going to... Yeah.
The second hand. Joint of the little finger.
Ah, okay.
On your
amazing.
Both hands.
Gosh. Okay, so I can push down on my...
Is that for his knees?
Yes.
Second joint of the little finger, that's for your knees.
Now, Dr. Lee, Korean acupuncture, how does it differ from sort of other forms of acupuncture?
We have so many types of acupuncture. So I cannot really compare every single one.
But for it's very this specialist one, on the hands, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, for this one, it's called the Korean hand acupuncture, which is unique to Korea. And then, as you said earlier, hand is believed to be a microcosm of the whole body. And then by inserting needles, or even you don't have needles and you are not a specialist of acupuncture, you can just press yourself.
Okay, so it's about pressure,
points.
Not just necessarily needles.
No.
So when do the needles come into it? So you've got the pressure points, and you can apply pressure yourself, or you can have pressure applied to you. When do the needles come into it? Is that to get the sort of acute kind of healing process?
I didn't get that point.
Are the needles a sort of more powerful way of doing it than just applying pressure?
Yes.
I don't like the smile on your face, Dr. Lee.
That's why you need doctor for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise...
And is it very sort of popular part of everyday medicine in Korea?
Yes. Actually, more than 3 million Koreans have learned this acupuncture method.
Oh, really?
And then they do it by themselves.
Gosh.
Even without needles. So it's a very popular self-treatment.
Yeah. Mm. So instead of just going to the doctor and taking pills, a lot of people will go to their local acupuncturist first.
Actually, we don't call it acupuncturist in Korea. We call it traditional Korean medical doctor.
Okay, traditional Korean KMD. Medical KMD.
And it seems like obviously a very ancient way of dealing with your aches and pains. I presume it is. I mean, I presume it's something that's been practiced in Korea for thousands of years, right?
Yes.
So you have a long lineage. And has the practice changed over the years? I mean, does it incorporate modern medicine in any way?
Oh, yes, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
We try to speak to each other with the traditional medicine side and the Western medicine side. Also, I'm a good example. I finished until PhD in traditional Korean medicine, and I'm doing my second PhD in Western Medical School in London.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so you're definitely experiencing both sides of Western. And do you feel the attitudes in Western medicine towards traditional Korean medicine are sort of becoming much more open?
I think so, yes. Especially in like Germany, where MDs are actually practice acupuncture on their patients.
Gosh.
And also, I think UK, many scholars, they are trying to understand this Korean traditional medicine or
I think we're all for it, and I think you are, as you said, a very good example of it. I like also the fact, I think it's the first time I've ever interviewed anyone with three pins in their head.
Will they stay in there for days, or do you take them out when you go to bed?
It depends. It depends. If I want it to stay, I can just leave it like this until the next morning.
Wow. I want to kind of think of turning over in your sleep.
No, I know.
Dr. Lee, thank you so much for coming on this wonderful live Midori House session from Career House here in Hyde Park. It's the bottom of the hour, so we're going to head back to the studio for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Thanks. Thank you very much. The United Nations Arab League Joint Special Envoy to Syria, Kofi Annan, has announced that he will be stepping down. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said in a statement that Annan had decided not to renew his mandate, which expires on the 31st of August. The Spanish Interior Ministry has released pictures of three people it said were linked to Al-Qaeda who were arrested today in Spain as part of a crackdown on the organisation. The Interior Minister said that the suspects were detained in southern Spain, one in possession of explosives they planned to use in attacks in Europe. More than 100 experts have attended the first international scientific meeting on nodding syndrome in Uganda's capital, Kampala. According to the WHO, it affects over 4,000 children in northern Uganda and has so far caused the death of 200 children. Romania's Constitutional Court has today delayed until the 12th of September its ruling on whether a referendum to impeach the president was valid. The court had been expected to invalidate Sunday's referendum after official data showed that the turnout did not reach the required 50% threshold. And in sport, China's Olympic badminton head coach Li Yongbo has apologised for instructing his top two players to throw matches. Mr. Li said he was to blame for the action, which was taken by two Chinese players and six others in an attempt to secure easier draws in the knockout stage of the badminton competition. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You're listening to Midori House live from Career House in London, Special Olympics edition. And because you can never have too much K-pop, this is Girls' Generation with Run Devil Run.
Don't call that girl, she's got the night. So I'm not much on a home, they all. But can't deny, they are in night.
That was Run Devil Run by Girls' Generation. You
That's
enjoyed
amazing.
That, Rob, didn't you?
I thought it was great. My favourite thing about Girls' Generation is the kind of band you can enjoy with the sound off.
What do you mean?
They just, you know, they make good videos. They're not a pervert. It's just...
There's about 15 of them, and they dance so incredibly. It's honestly mesmerising, so you can enjoy it, but it's probably better to listen to with the music on.
No, you're right. I'm not trying to belittle their wonderful sound at all. And you're listening to Midori House live from Korea House, hence the K-pop, hence the screaming girls beforehand.
Hence what about the royal live uniforms that we're
hence
wearing.
Hence the royal uniforms. I'm getting quite hot in my royal uniform. It's a pretty damn good addition to Midori House, we hope. But the Olympics, it's kind of what we're here for, right?
Indeed, it is. And the Olympics aren't just about sporting glory or patriotic rivalry. They're about money too, of course. And with a billion eyes from around the world glued to the same footage, they're a boon for advertisers and sponsors. This year, official sponsors have had an extraordinary stranglehold over proceedings. The press has fallen on tales of innocent shopkeepers near Stratford being threatened with legal action for advertising Pepsi in their shop windows.
So, here to navigate us through the murky obstacle course of Olympic sponsorship and branding opportunity is TVC's Group Commercial Director, Adam Klein. Adam, welcome to Midori House.
Thank you. Happy
Sorry
to be
there weren't
here.
Enough traditional Korean costumes to go round.
That's all right. I was just disappointed there was no screaming girls when I came to the microphone. So I felt like I've let the side down.
We were just jealous. We ushered them away.
Absolutely.
So the first question's got to be, it seems like a very commercially driven Olympic Games. There seems to be a lot of logos. We know who all the brands are. From your sort of professional perspective, does it seem like a success, just a mere success in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue of branding and big sporting events is an interesting one. I think the general public will look at it one specific way, which is, you know, these brands are cannibalizing the event. But I think the reality of the situation is these events cost an extraordinary amount of money. And yes, the British public have paid some of that money. But fundamentally, without the sponsors involved, they wouldn't happen, these events. And you do need the likes of Coca-Cola and Visa and all these kind of people to put their hands in their pocket, invest in the games and make it happen. I think the other thing that's interesting with the games is also, it's not just about the event itself, but actually all the sports have brands investing in them all the way through as well. So you have brands like British Gas investing in swimming, you have brands like Aviva investing in athletics, and that's what this is all about. You know, these Olympians, it takes a massive, massive investment to get them winning gold medals, and that's what everybody wants to see. So people do adopt a level of cynicism, but fundamentally, we need the brands to help the whole thing happen. Otherwise, it just, you know, we wouldn't have this extraordinary event going on our doorstep. So, you know, it does work both ways.
Absolutely. Adam, is there a case, though, for saying that sometimes it can backfire? I mean, we mentioned there in the introduction to the piece that there's been so much negative press. Or is it a case that any press is good press at this level?
I think some of the issue has been not necessarily the brands. People are always quick to jump on the brands because they know the brands involved. But fundamentally, they're not driving who isn't allowed to do, you know, what level of branding. There is an Olympic organization that is also in control of the brand of Olympics. And, you know, it's not the big brands who are saying shut down that shop because they sell Olympic kebabs and they've been selling it for 8 years. And it does, you know,
can't help it because they're Greek.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly, they would be.
Well, but, you know, for me, it's about, you know, how do you sort of navigate the waters? There does need to be maybe sometimes a little bit more common sense. But what's been really interesting in these games is there has been some great stories coming out about, you know, being too harsh on it. But then you've had brands being really smart about how they have navigated the rules and restrictions. So you've had Nike, who are not an official sponsor, going through all the loopholes and going through all the wording and finding a way of delivering an unbelievable TV. That's the brand police.
The Pepsi selling shopkeepers.
I think it's the brand police going to shut me down. You have Nike who've developed this global TV commercial, and their idea for it is to find all the areas around the world called London, and they've shot it in all of those places. So that's how they've alluded to this extraordinary event in London. But they're not involved with the games because it's Adidas who are the official sponsors. Yeah. You also had one of the betting organisations, was it Paddy Power, who'd done a similar thing with London in Paris, and they talked about an egg and spoon race. And they were sort of very toyishly provocative, saying we're sponsoring the biggest event in London, and then in smaller writing it's not that one but the egg and spoon race in near Paris. So that's quite British as well in its approach. It's kind of, we like to be a bit cheeky, we like to push the boundaries, we like to push the rules, and actually the consumers are really engaging with people pushing those boundaries. But fundamentally, we do need the big sponsors, and we do need to sort of endorse them and get behind them and realize that actually they are in it. Yes, some of it is for corporate social responsibility and doing some good, but they are major corporations who do need to see a commercial return. They're investing tens of millions, literally. So it's kind of quite right that they should have some level of protection, but I think there's a common sense prevails issue.
And how, I mean, we were talking also before we turned on the mics about individual athletes, mm-hmm. and kind of what can happen when you, you know, when you get a silver medal. We were talking about our British swimmer, when she got the silver medal, she's kind of hit pay dirt, you know. Yeah. And I wonder whether, you know, is that something you obviously look at with a professional eye and an eye of general interest as well, to see who's going to be popping up in Visa commercials maybe in yeah. 2 months' time?
I mean, this kind of been, because it's been on our doorstep this year, it's been an interesting one, because we work with a lot of Olympic and sporting category sponsors. And, you know, we've been working with a lot of these athletes. And, you know, we knew 2 years ago who the hopefuls were, and you go on the journey with them and you mm-hmm. see. And, you know, everyone back at TVC is sort of like emotionally engaged watching the swimming, because, you know, we're desperate for these people to win, just because we're part of their journey and we're really excited about it. So
that's I love that sort of, that is marketing speak, Hugo.
We're going on an emotional journey together.
Like,
there you go. There'll be a few more of those.
It's true, isn't it? Because you invest in these people. That we can be cynical about these brands and all the rest of it, but they do presume they invest in people, and they know people, and they're friends with people. It's not just sticking a sticker on someone's fencing outfit.
There has also been, particularly with the British athletes, some criticism though also that the sponsorships and the deal have taken away precious kind of training time.
I think,
and when you see the number of adverts that Jessica Ennis has posted on, you sort of worry that maybe most of her training time was spent in between photo shoots.
Yeah, I don't think that's true at all, if I'm being honest. I mean, fundamentally, these athletes train hard. I mean, they train all hours of the day, every single day. They eat healthily, and they've been doing this for years. And, you know, I think the brands help them do that. They help facilitate, they help invest, they invest in the sport. And the ambassadors or the athletes, they do some stuff in return for that, obviously. But actually, the brands really do invest. And there can always be cynicism, and people always like to sort of attach this sort of, you know, there's a big thing going on, the brands are evil and they're doing all this thing. It's not true at all. They're helping the sports. And actually, Jess Ennis is a great example, because Aviva has been involved with athletics for the last, I think, 7 years or something. It's not a badging exercise for Aviva. They've not turned up on, in fact, they're not even an Olympic sponsor. They've been involved with athletics for so many years, getting these young hopefuls and taking them all the way through. You've got brands like Lloyds TSB who do a whole local heroes thing. And you don't hear about that stuff with the cynicism that you do with when it's the big event, because it's almost like they're an easy target when there's a big event. But fundamentally, on the grassroots level, the brands are helping identify the talent, working with the governing bodies of each of the sports and bringing them through the ranks to kind of really push out. And that's where our next generation of sporting stars will come from, not just for these Olympics, yeah. but in years to come.
And presumably it's also about the personalities of the people involved as well. Being Bradley Wiggins is great because you're the fastest man on a bicycle in years,
yeah.
but also because he's kind of got a look. He's kind of a mod, and he's got all this.
Yeah,
he's not another boring sportsman.
Those sideburns are going to be worth a hell of a lot of money, and you know, I'd be insuring them if I was him.
It's going to say, from your point of view, is this very important that people can talk a good game afterwards, be vaguely amusing, arch their eyebrows slightly, rather than just trotting out a press release? You know,
absolutely. You need to have fun, and you know, he has done it. He's had an unbelievable year, but you know. He's got these kind of iconic sideburns, which are going to be, they help define him as a brand, not just as an individual. And that's what enables the Sun yesterday to say, cut out the sideburns, stick them on and show your support. You know, if he gets sick of those sideburns in 2-3 years, he's going to have to take a commercial decision about whether he wants to trim them, not just a fashion decision. So these kind of things are all at play, actually, because that's now the brand that kind of won Olympic gold, won Tour de France. And he needs to consider that, and that's quite fun, and you can have fun with these things, and you shouldn't take it too seriously.
And never trust a man who shaves his legs but keeps his sideburns that long.
Well, yeah, there's a life lesson in there somewhere, I think.
Adam Klein, commercial director of the TVC Group. We're going to have to leave it there.
Okay.
What do you think of the show so far? It's been good. What about the girls?
We'll
maybe get them back
fantastic.
In to say goodbye to you.
Yeah, I want the big cheer.
I'm outside for you, Adam.
I'm still disappointed I didn't get the big cheer.
You are listening to Midori House, live from Career House here in Hyde Park, and we'll be back in a second.
At one of the world's busiest seaports, Laem Chabang, it's easy to see why Thailand is such a dynamic trading hub. With our entrepreneurial, multi-skilled workforce, we're busy making sure vital goods get to market on time, every time. It's this hands-on approach that's made us the globe's fifth largest container shipping nation. But it's not only goods we're exporting. Our pop music is a big hit too. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
Nestled into the urban fabric of London, Hong Kong, New York and Tokyo, Monocle shops are small, cosy outposts of everything we care about. That's incredible design, credible provenance, charming service, and of course, intelligent journalism. Stock up on the latest issue of the magazine, browse our carefully curated selection of books and music, or seek out your favourite back issue to fill that gap in your Monocle archive. So, drop in to one of our shops, and our friendly staff will be on hand to show you around. For addresses and opening hours, visit monocle.com.
You are listening to Monocle 24, live from Korea House! Yeah!
You certainly damn well are. Welcome back to Midori House, live from Korea House here in Hyde Park. It couldn't be a more Korean-themed show. I think we've kind of ticked every single box.
I would like a big steaming bowl of bibimbap in front of me.
I wouldn't mind some nice chilled soju.
Oh, yes. Soju and bibimbap.
I can hear
Maybe
the Queen coming past. She's going
in.
To jump out. Exactly.
She is.
The Queen and James Bond going past there.
With kimchi.
Exactly. We're keeping it on a Korean theme because we're now joined by International Corporation Manager for the Korean Olympic Committee. That's quite a name, isn't it? Quite a title. Simon Sung-ha Kim, who's here to shed some light on Korea's sterling efforts and impressive results in the Olympics so far. Well, Simon, welcome to
Thank you.
Korea, number three. South Korea, number three.
Yes, now, so far.
Should we allow ourselves a little whoop? And Simon, you're here and you're fetching South Korean tracksuits. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Let's have an outfit off, first of all. What do you think of our traditional Korean dress?
Traditional Korean dress. You know, now you're saying it's wonderful, huh? It's beautiful, huh?
What sport would we be good at? Yeah.
Sorry?
I wonder what sport you thought we would be good at.
Oh,
this.
Like probably archery?
Yeah, I think this is kind of archery. Mm-hmm. Or possibly horse riding.
Yeah.
Shooting. Maybe.
Something with a low drag efficient. This wouldn't be any good for cycling, I suppose.
Okay.
Or for swimming.
Or swimming.
So talk us through the South Korean effort. When did the sort of Team Korea turn up? What have the preparations been like? What are they eating?
They are eating Korean food.
Are they?
Yeah.
So there's a whole bandwagon of chefs and of all the rest of it.
Yeah, they're just eating Korean food and you know bulgogi or like a bibimbap, those traditional Korean food. They're just eating it.
Where do they stay, Simon?
Now in London. I think most of them are staying in Olympic Village and last of them are staying in Brunei University.
Okay.
There's a Korean training camp in Brunei University now.
Right. And South Korea have done amazingly well so far.
Yes.
Any big surprises, or was this very much part of the plan?
Because first and second, third day, we were a little bit disappointed, you know, what's happening in fencing or judo and swimming. There's a little, you know, misjudgment happening. So we are a little bit disappointed. But yesterday we got three goals. Three athletes, they were promising athletes, but we didn't really expect the gold from them. But they finally got gold medal, so that's kind of a surprise, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a thing in the UK sometimes, there are sports that maybe aren't that popular. You know, we like football and cricket and things, and maybe we're not so good at them in the Olympics. Is that the same? Are Koreans good in the Olympics at the sports that they love at home?
Yeah.
If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every single person.
Because I've been to Seoul a few times. I've never seen anyone fencing in the street.
Yeah.
Not Kim Ji-yeon. No.
Because Korea, we have a little bit different sports system compared to European country.
Yeah.
Like, elite sports system and sports for all system is totally separated. So if, like, a young athlete, they want to participate in the Olympic Games, they try to be, the elite elite athletes, not like a sports for all, you know, athletes. Mm-hmm. We are like different systems. So they just put their all effort and time, you know, putting on at practice and, you know, playing sports. So they try to be, you know, representative from their team or their city. So they finally, if they get it, they come to the National Training Center and they practice for the Olympic Games or other, you know, international competitions. And, you know, they practice again. So they participate in the Olympic Games.
And it's this the legacy of Seoul 88 Olympics that, you know, we're now seeing the younger people who maybe remember the Olympics as children and thought, actually, I want to be on that podium. 15 years later, these are the people that we're seeing winning golds in the Olympics today. People in Seoul, in South Korea, who are now athletes, are these people who grew up watching Seoul 88? And then is there a lot of money now spent on training athletes in Korea because of the Seoul Olympics?
Could be the reason, but not the most. Because, you know, if you think about the Korean history, after we had a Korean War, you're, you know, kind of like, you know, developing country. But since Korea, you know, economic status has been growing up, so people, they just want to look, you know, look for the other stuff. They can enjoy their life. So sports was the tool, you know, make the flourish their life. So also more and more people try to participate in the sports. So, you know, I think that was like a basic stuff of it, I think.
So it seems like more Koreans are going and playing sport than watching
now,
it on TV,
now,
right?
Yeah, now they are playing a lot.
Yeah. And are there going to be any sports that are made popular by this Olympic Games in London in Korea, do you think?
You mean specific events?
Yeah.
I think soccer and archery and probably taekwondo is coming up, so taekwondo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I like that. I'd love to see archery, kind of like kids run playing, kicking football around in the street. I love this. Shooting bows and arrows, cowboys and Indians style in the streets of Gwangju is brilliant, right?
Well, we wish you and the South Korean team all the very best of luck for the medal count and hope that you can hold on to third position. Third position? Fourth?
It's third right now.
Third right now.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Simon Sung-ha Kim, International Cooperation Manager for the Korean Olympic Committee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monaco 24.
Olimpíski igrišo po Monaco 24.
Lontoosta maailmalle Monaco 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monaco 24.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
You are listening to Monaco 24, live from Korea House! Yeah!
I'm never going to get fed up with that jingle.
No.
I kind of want that to follow me around. This kind of reminds me of the one-man band we had on the Austrian show on Tuesday night. But we are no more really in Korea from Korea House. And London Korea Links is a UK-based website founded in 2006, which covers Korean arts and culture in London and elsewhere. It's a reflection on the way Korean culture has begun to gain momentum among foreigners outside of Asia.
We're joined now by the editor of the London Korea Links website, Philip Gauman, to tell us more about how Korea promotes itself to the world. Philip, thank you very much. Korea's doing a very good job at promoting itself to the world via Midori House today.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. I'm sorry I missed some of the K-pop earlier. But, I mean, you were talking about the branding opportunities earlier, the marketing opportunities, and really the Ministry of Culture this year have been spending a lot of time and money on using the Olympics to promote Korean culture. So kind of hanging off the Olympics, there's a whole range of art shows and music at the South Bank. We were talking about skirting around the branding police, the five rings of the Olympic logo. They've been having five art exhibitions, five concerts. So they've been quite clever about it. So really they're using the Olympics to get attention. It's called All Eyes on Korea. And it's just been a really wide range of stuff.
The show at the Starch is absolutely amazing. I've been invited to all sorts of things down at the South Bank Centre, as you say. Is it a tough sell, Philip? I mean, it seems like we had 50 girls who got off a bus to come and sing K-pop in front of a video screen for us today. So it can't be that difficult.
No, that's right. Yeah. And one of the good things that the Ministry of Culture are doing are trying to engage that K-pop enthusiasm to get the people interested in K-pop interested in the other art forms of Korea. So there was an academy earlier over this year, trying to get them interested in the visual arts, the history, the film, the food, and of course everyone loves the food.
Well, Philip, this is what I wanted to talk to you about, because it feels like Korean food is sort of the next big food explosion. Is that something that has been sort of coordinated, or is it more just that a few sort of intrepid people have decided to open a bibimbap restaurant?
Absolutely. Well, I think Korean restaurants have been around in London for about 30, maybe even as long as 40 years. And that's really been a private enterprise thing. In New York, the government has actually sponsored a big-ticket Korean restaurant, which maybe has put the backs up the local trade. And just recently in London, in Great Marlborough Street, brand new bibimbap restaurant, I think you mentioned earlier, has opened up. That promises to be really good. I'm unaware, actually, in London, of any big government money behind it. There may well be, but the bibimbap restaurant in London, I think they're going to open a chain. That's a big Korean corporation behind that. So lots of investment. I'm looking forward to going to that one as soon as I possibly can.
And is this the kind of... I mean, this is obviously a great sort of soft power thing. This is something we discuss on Monocle Radio a lot of the time. Yeah. But it seems quite seamless. I've been to Seoul a few times, and I've always had an amazing time.
Absolutely.
I always come back feeling like I need a month's sleep, really. Yeah. Is that something...
Your liver needs a bit of a recovery time.
Exactly, I know. And it never gets it. No. And I wonder whether that's the kind of thing where you're trying to sort of... selling the sort of essence, or trying to encourage people in the essence of Korea. The food's one thing, the pop music's another thing, but there is something kind of amazingly exciting about the city of Seoul. How
Absolutely.
Easy is it to sort of broadcast that to the wider public, and the British public or the international public?
That's a challenge. I remember my first time in Seoul, I was expecting it to be really familiar through all the Korean films that I've been watching, but actually I found it really, really alien. But you get used to it. And communicating the vibrancy of Seoul to a UK audience, I think we need to stress the design, the fashion, the K-pop that's going on. Yeah. Some of the things in Seoul won't be familiar to a lot of Brits, you know, the noribang, the karaoke singing room culture. But
try getting me out of one of those before 6 a.m. And also there's a lot of amazing kind of, I mean, obviously the technology is very famous, but there's a lot of very imaginative entrepreneurs. I've met people there that are doing amazing things, sort of fusing branding and the record industry and all these different sort of things seem to be kind of converging in South Korea. Yep. Seoul itself has been very famous for being sort of the point at which this triangle meets.
Yeah, and it's... where technology companies from the West trial out their products, so they say. So it's a very savvy audience out there.
And Philip, with the sports, obviously, that's happening in the Olympics, I don't think I'm alone in saying that we're quite amazed how well South Korea have done.
But I think in China, in the Peking Olympics, they did pretty well. They were in the top 10, I think.
Well. But, I mean, this is something that I think a lot of people are thinking, gosh, South Korea, amazing sportsmen. Not just singers and not just good films.
No, absolutely. Sportsmen, artists, musicians. The huge number of artists there are in London coming to study. It's amazing. And a lot of the stuff that's going on right now as part of the Olympics, totally free. If you've gone along to the South Bank, you'll see these strange, weird, green, baskety things under the QEH, which brightens things up. And this is probably something that you haven't been to yet. Cavendish Square, behind John Lewis, there's this big equestrian statue of the Duke of Cumberland made out of soap. It's going to be there for a year.
And
over the year,
artist.
We are going to... Yes, a Korean artist. And over the year, it's just going to be melting away, eroding away. So a year's time, we'll see what it looks like.
Wonderful. Well, Philip Guyman, editor of London Korea Links website, thank you very much for joining us.
I think he's got a great... I think he's got a very easy job. I'm going to ask him about that. and that's all we have time for today. Our producers were Dawn Trump and Katie Bilbao, with the help of Alex Funnel, Adrian Craddock and Toby Hammond. Thanks to everyone here at Korea House for being such wonderful hosts. I almost said Midori House.
No.
Korea House. We'll be continuing Olympic tour tomorrow when we head to Russia Park. And Hugo will be back with Marcus Hippie tomorrow. The news is next, then The Urbanist. But for more of us here at Korea House, I'm Robert Bound.
I'm Hugo MacDonald.
Thanks for tuning in.
Vous écoutez Monaco 24.
Dobro pozdravljati Monaco 24.
Du lytter til Monaco 24.
Você está escutando a Monaco 24.
Sie hören Monaco 24.
Acute Monaco 24.
Kuuntelet Monaco 24.
You're listening to Monaco 24.
A Rolex timepiece represents an ongoing commitment to innovation, horological expertise, and the passion of skilled watchmakers. All add up to make the one principle by which Rolex lives, that greatness is a journey that never ends. Rolex.